Hi, I'm Teresa, owner of T3 Fit, and you're listening to the T3 Fit podcast, where scoliosis warriors and professionals come together. Here we talk about our scoliosis journeys and the emotional components it takes on from being a parent to being diagnosed with scoliosis and sometimes leading to surgery. It's a place where professionals share their expertise of treatments, from physical therapy to surgery, and so much more. So let's get started. Hey, everybody, welcome to the T3 Fit Scoliosis Podcast. On today's episode, I want to say that we have a very special guest, in my opinion. His name is Paul Bolvinsky, excuse me. Yeah. And he is a teacher and a master of the gata, of juries, of so many tools that I am personally very passionate about, and I know many others are as well. I wanted to bring him on the show today to talk about his journey with the gata and how it started and how it has helped him along the way. So, Paul, I would like to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Teresa. It's good to be here.
Thank you for coming. Can you share with us how you started on this journey of training and working with the gata?
Sure. The journey started basically with kettlebells. And what I really liked about kettlebell work was the swing in the kettlebell. So basically swinging the kettlebell down between your legs and then up onto the shoulder and into the rack position. Mm-hmm. And that was really fascinating for me. There was a sort of ballistic movement there that I really liked. And I really went to the internet to see what else there was to swing. And I found a book by two authors written in 1905 called Cobbett and Jenkin. And lo and behold, in the book, there were plans for Indian clubs. And I thought, I have to do this. I mean, it was just quite sort of so fascinating that I wanted to try it out. I found a local wood turner and had four pairs of clubs made up, each one of the designs in that book. And started, and I remember the first days when I actually stood and held a club in each hand, mm-hmm. had no idea what to do. So then after that, it was just a manic search of you know, how to do this. On the way, I sort of strayed into club bells, which is the steel clubs. Mm-hmm. And I basically, didn't like the coldness of the steel, and I loved the warmth of the wood in my hand.
Okay.
And it felt very, very natural as opposed to the steel feeling cold. With kettlebell work, it gives the kettlebells warm up, the handle warms up. So there's a big difference there. So, moving on. And I started basically swinging and trying various movements out. I found another book by a guy written 1889 from memory. Called Ferdinand Lemar, who was a German guy living in London. He had a gym there, and his book is my Bible still to this day.
Okay.
I'm going back to sort of 2007, around about then when I first started getting into this.
Okay.
And I started following the illustrations in his book, and his illustrations are very complex with lots of dotted lines of where the club should go. Mm-hmm. And it was a combination of experimenting, swinging, you know, and finding different movements, then referring back to the book, and then realizing, oh no, I've just done this. So and that sort of progressed more and more. Mm-hmm. And the complexity of the swinging just developed as time went on.
Okay.
And then very interesting things started happening that I started realizing that obviously breathing was very much part of club swinging. So for example, as you swing the clubs overhead, you can breathe in. Mm-hmm. And then when you swing the clubs down towards the ground, you breathe out.
Okay.
So the breathing can obviously then start setting a rhythm for the type of for any form of swinging as far as Indian clubs go. And then you've got, let's describe a very basic exercise with an Indian club. Just with one hand, if you swing if you hold a club in your right hand and hold it straight with a straight arm overhead, mm-hmm. swing it away from the body, so this out to the side, mm-hmm. and then across the body, and then back up overhead again. That's called a front circle. There's another circle, which is a back shoulder circle, which you can continue through. You then move your elbow up, lift it up, and you swing a back circle. And that's it creates a the combination of the two circles creates a heart shape, and it's called a heart-shaped swing. Mm-hmm. Now, so this has lots of permutations. You can swing it inwards, outwards, and you can swing the clubs with both hands mirroring each other on sides, so the left and right side mirror each other, or you can go into which is something called asynchronous swinging, where one arm swings a front circle whilst the other one swings a back circle.
Okay.
And this basically, what this starts developing is, it's sort of awareness of everything around you, because the clubs start creating an extension of your arm. So but they also have to be part of your body. So you have to be very aware of where you're swinging them and what you're doing with them.
Right.
This also develops your grip work, because you have to change your grip work from a hammer grip, which is like literally holding a hammer, to a saber grip, mm-hmm. which is is used for pointing things, like in old terms, a sword or a rapier or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's working your hand muscles, your forearm, right into your shoulder, and then basically the joints are moving from your shoulder to your elbow to your wrist. Mm-hmm. All of that is being rotated and moved during a club swing. Another important point is that depending on the type of swing that you're doing, your upper body can rotate half left or half right, which means that you're from standing square facing forward, you're rotating your shoulders to the right, mm-hmm. or to the left, half mm-hmm. a turn, mm-hmm. or with your hips still facing forward, you can do a full right or a full left. That means that you're turning completely to one side or the other,
right,
to perform a type of movement, which is giving you amazing spinal rotation.
Right. Which in my world is very limited.
Sure.
So you said before, the westernized version of the gata is the mace is what I use, and some of us here use who are fused. Yes. But the thing that's wonderful about that is just when even doing a 360, we have the feeling of what I say, limitless with the limitations.
Yes.
So the internal rotation of the shoulders and the slight trunk movement, we don't necessarily think about, oh, we can't bend sideways or we can't bend forward. And it's this wonderful meditation, way I like to think of it, and swinging with the gata and with the clubs, that you don't really think about if you see somebody doing it for the first time. And I remember when I had the opportunity of working with you, just learning all of that was so overwhelming, because watching you and Kelly do it, and then I was like, I'm not sure that I can do this.
Sure.
It was,
because I remember that day very clearly. I mean, you seemed to break, by the end of the day, you seemed to break through the barriers of scoliosis, in the sense that it opened your mind to the whole discipline, which was great.
Yeah.
I mean, that really stuck out to my mind, with your experience of the day.
But that was because of you. And that I was just actually talking about this day recently, yesterday, because going to Central Park.
Mm.
And yes. Imagine and swinging the gattas, and seeing the Dakota. But it's that you had shoulder issues, and you had mentioned previously about, just with aging, but swinging as long as you have been, it has become easier with the issues, because if you hadn't been swinging, it would have been that much harder. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah, correct. Yeah, I had just to sort of explain basically what happened. I went a lot, had a lot of shoulder pain over a couple of years, and it got just got progressively worse. I used to still swing clubs every day, and the gutter basically sort of, you know, a week contains all of that. And finally went to the doctor, and he said, "Oh, this seems to be an age related thing. I'm now 73. This was when I was at the end of my, you know, just before I became 72. And after x-rays and so on, it was determined that it was a shoulder spur that had basically cut through the tendon on the top of my arm. And so the tendon had to be reattached. It severed it almost 100%. It was just hanging on by threads.
Okay.
So, you know, we had to cut my shoulder open, repair the tendon. And they found also that my biceps had slightly been severed because of the strain, because of the tendon being severed, that the biceps was taking too much strain.
Mm-hmm.
They had to reattach the biceps also. And then the recovery started, and the training started after recovery. And I was given sort of very straightforward, simple exercises to do. For instance, lying down on a bed, holding my hands together as if I was in prayer, pushing up and then down, lying on the bed. So I was directly above my chest and down again, doing that three times a day, 20 or 30 repetitions. And then as that went on, the next exercise was the same thing, but putting my hands over to the back of my head, to the nape of my neck, and then back again.
Okay.
Nothing out to the sides. This went on for about 6 to 8 weeks from memory.
Okay.
And then I realized at the time that I could do the mace movement just, and you'll know what I'm talking about here, is if you imagine that you're holding a mace and putting your arms to the back,
bullhorn.
Then if you turn your shoulders from one side to the other, you're mimicking the mace. I mean, if you lift it up on one side, you can then pull it down on the other, which is basically a mace movement.
Right.
So that when I rediscovered this, I was got really very excited. And the surgeon basically told me that from my age, my recovery was very fast, because when I originally went to see him, he told me 18 months to 2 years recovery.
Wow. Okay.
From this operation. And he told me after 6 months, I'm done. Don't need to come back. Purely because of the Indian club swinging.
Because of the training. That's amazing.
Because of the training and because of the mobility. And he said that, you know, my strength in my shoulders and arms was good enough to, you know, that I'd maintained it, even though I'd lost a lot of muscle mass, especially on my left shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that was just built up basically after, you know, once I started training on my own again.
Okay.
And I you know, you have to put any form of sort of, I call it male ego, where, you know, we're going for heavier weights all the time. And, you know, be humble, drop right back down to the lightest weights. And I was literally using Indian clubs weighing half a pound.
Okay.
And started training, started the movements, and basically brought myself back. But I will say to this day that I haven't got back to the stage or the strength stage of what I was prior to the operation.
Okay.
But there again, I've moved on a few years since then. And I'm thinking that that's got something to do with it also, because, I mean, I know younger guys who can build back up to the strength that they had previously. And I'm finding that as far as getting old is concerned, that's not the case. I mean, you've just got to read your body all the time.
Yeah. Well, it's so, you had just said, you know, the mace. I say this all the time, and because people look at the mace and people say, oh, this looks like such an awesome piece of equipment. You look like a badass. And it's like, it's not about that at all.
Yeah, no.
This is not, training with the mace, it's not about looking like some big, you know, huge, jacked, strong mega person.
Sure.
It's this place where, as you said, you have to leave your ego outside. And it demands respect.
Yeah.
It demands respect. And I feel that even training with a gata, as you often have, there's a different level of respect, because swinging a mace made of steel versus a gada, they're similar, but they're two very different.
Yeah.
Just the materials alone.
Yes. The weight. The main difference is the weight distribution, because there's weight in the handle of the, pardon me, steel gada, and or the steel mace, and there's because the traditional gada is made from concrete and bamboo. There's no weight in the concrete. Sorry, no weight in the bamboo. All the weight is right at the end in the ball.
Right.
But you know, just going back quickly to my shoulder recovery. I have a gada that I made up here for training students, which is basically a wooden pole, like a broomstick, with a basketball on the end, which I basically pushed into the base of the handle into the basketball.
Okay.
Filled it with foam, and it weighs 2 pounds.
That's brilliant.
What there is there is the ability, you've got a bit of a weight at the end of a pole that you can make gada movements with,
right?
And you're not dealing with the drastic increase in weight as you drop the gada behind the body,
right?
That one of the reasons I made that originally was because I found that with some of the students I had, there was a definite fear of injury that people had with the gada. And you know, it wasn't just restricted to, you know, either male or female, or it was both. And there were some people that just literally could not understand. They just thought that they were going to hurt themselves. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Consequently, the basketball gada was born as a training tool to, how can you hurt yourself with this?
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah.
To just try it.
Yeah.
And one of the things I found that was very, very interesting, especially with people that had that sort of like, you know, fear of injury, was that even though I demonstrated the movements, and you know that you know yourself that the movements are on the frontal plane, it's behind the shoulders, but the movement is from left to right and back again.
Right.
And I've had students, especially the ones that have sort of fear injury, completely misinterpreting that after a demonstration and literally lifting their hands, holding the gada over their shoulder. And where does it go? Straight into the bum. Hits them in the bum.
Yeah.
You know, that's the sort of training that we as trainers have to perform, is to make sure that people understand that the swing of the gada is a straight line on the frontal plane that goes across the back of the body from left to right.
Right.
It does not go back and basically hit you in the rear.
And practicing that with a basketball will feel still safer, because in my world,
it will still feel safer, and it can be done. I mean, it can be, the weight is not an issue. It's the,
right.
You know, you've got a ball at the end of a stick, technically.
Yeah.
You can swing that, and, you know, you can have your grip correct and so on. And once you've done that and you learned the lesson, then you can progress very quickly to using a bit of weight.
Yeah. And in my world, because so many of us, when our spines are fused, we have hardware screwed into our spine.
Sure.
The fact of hitting the back is that much more terrifying.
Absolutely.
But with a stick with a basketball, I mean, that's brilliant. And it's so simple. And there is weight involved.
Yeah, it's a little bit. I mean, the whole thing weighs 2 pounds, as I say.
Right.
I mean, it's not a lot of weight. Now, the other thing that I wanted to mention is I was diagnosed in 2017 with prostate cancer.
Okay.
And I just wanted to mention what a huge impact my training with Indian clubs and the mace or gada had on my recovery from chemo and the rest, all that sort of treatment of androgen blockers and, you know, stopping my testosterone, because the testosterone was feeding on the cancer was feeding on the testosterone, and so on. And one day that I had it was a light bulb moment day. It was pouring with rain here in Perth in West Australia, and I was trying to have a walk every day prior to training. And that day I thought, no, I'm just not doing that. And I used to come back from the walks incredibly tired because of the chemo and everything else. And that day, raining, walked into my studio and picked up the gada, bamboo and concrete. And I thought, I'm just going to try this and see. And I used to, in those days, I mean, I was retching from the chemo, dry retching, basically.
Yeah.
And I started swinging after about 5 to 7 minutes. I don't know what the time was. all of that went, all that sort of nausea went away. And I started swinging completely. It was freedom like you wouldn't believe it from being sick. And I swung that day for 40 minutes after that happened. It was amazing. And then from then on.
40? 40?
40 minutes, yes. Yeah, that's a long time. But remember, I've been doing that for quite some time prior to this. So, you know, when I went into chemo, I was very fit.
Yeah.
This was about the third month into chemo where my sort of, you know, the chemo builds up in your body and your tolerance goes down.
Right.
So, you know, you start feeling very, very ill. And so consequently, and I was trying to walk because I thought the walking would help me to train. And then I was coming back so tired that I found it difficult to train. In this instance, didn't do the walk, but then swung the mace. And suddenly it was like, yes, it's there. And from then on, I swung the mace. And then again, the chemo started building up because this was chemo 3. I had 6 of them. And as I went through to 4, 5, and 6, obviously the buildup was greater and my, you know, physical prowess wasn't just there to do it.
Right.
So the amount of exercise that I did, but it was like every day it was just like a spark of sunshine in my day to start doing this. And I came out of the gym room feeling great. So for anybody who has that sort of, or having chemo, and you know, what I'm trying to say here is when you have in that situation, you have to exercise as much as possible. Because it just makes you feel better. Yeah. And I mean, I think that as far as oncologists are concerned, that's definitely something that you can do regardless of which cancer you have.
Yeah.
I just want to let you that in.
That's yeah. I mean, that's amazing because when you're in that space, sometimes the last thing you want to think about is exercising.
Yeah.
And being exhausting.
Yes. Yeah. And I must admit that it was hard. Believe me, it was hard to start with. But then, you know, once I realized that I could break through that nausea, and so every day I went in feeling nauseous and started swinging, and it would just literally dissipate. It was just extraordinary how that happened. Okay. Yes, there is a sense. And I think that something else I think is interesting and it's worth mentioning because we haven't spoken about the technical side of a swing that it relates to Indian clubs and the gutter. Is that you? Let's say, for example, we have a 5-pound gadda, which is basically 5 pounds weight on the end of a stick.
Right.
And you're going to swing that. So when you're holding that up in front of the body, it will weigh 5 pounds. And I mean, you've got skeletal support that's holding that up.
Right.
As you drop it either over your left shoulder or your right shoulder, the gravitational acceleration of allowing that to drop behind you increases the weight threefold.
Yeah.
So by the time it reaches your center back or your spine, it's 15 pounds. And then as the weight swings up again, it decreases until it gets back to the front again and it weighs 5 pounds.
Yeah.
Now, what's important about that, and I think that to all of us is incredibly important to understand, is that the weight is dropping behind you, it accelerates. And what we want to do as an athlete is to grab hold of that inertia that's being generated by the gravitational pull and use that on the upside to pull the weight back up again. And that's what the training is all about. So consequently, we may have heard about it in sort of a Far Eastern martial arts where they're using the weight of the opponent to pull them over or sort of, you know, pull them over their shoulders by using your own weight. I mean, here you're using the weight of the gadda itself or the mace by pulling on it to pull it up onto the other side. And you've got, you know, you're utilizing the acceleration to do it. And I just think that's a really interesting point to understand.
It's a really interesting point, and it's so important because I'll just talk about it in the scoliosis world. When we don't, with the spinal fusions, we don't have the capability of moving our spines. So to be able to, you know, push it away and then pull it back in, you're going to fire in all those core muscles for that to happen. Yes. And there there's a specific type of physical therapy. It's called Schroth. And there are Schroth specialists who I've personally spoken with who are really excited about the mace and the gata and the heavier clubs, because it does that for us when it is really hard to find the how to build on core strength. But using those modalities, it is an on, it's an instant firing that we don't have to think about. And that is so exciting.
Yes.
To be able to do that and then, you know, push it away and pull it back in to do a 360 or a 10-2 and have it falling behind you without, you know, falling backwards and then standing upright and firing those muscles. And it's just, they were.
I think something else is, comes to my mind here. One of the things that I like to do with new students as far as teaching the mace itself is for them is basically a tricep stretch, which means that you're holding your elbow right up into this position here. Your hand is at the back of your, the neck of your neck, and but you're holding the mace there.
Right.
This is basically doing two things. It's stretching the triceps here, and it's making you aware that the mace has to swing from the elbow rather than the wrist. Because the true swing as it's as it should happen is that the let's say if we start from the center front holding the mace in front of the body, you push the mace up and it starts to fall, and then your hands follow and the elbows are last. And then when you come around to the other side, your elbows lead the way, your hands follow, and then the mace comes down.
Right.
And that's the format that it should be. And I often worry, I sometimes see people swinging by swinging from their wrists at the back of the head, and the wrists are too high up. So they're above the head or behind the head, as opposed to the nape of the neck.
Right.
And that small adjustment makes a huge difference, and it can affect the elbows if it's done on a repetitive basis. And the reason I'm saying that is because I used to do that. I didn't, because when I first started swinging the mace, I didn't know about where the what the positioning was like. And then I discovered that we have to swing from the elbow. The elbow is incredibly strong as far as dealing with the increase in weight we were discussing earlier on.
Right.
And it will support that weight. But we've also got to train any newcomers to just literally holding a weight behind you with stretching the triceps. And it's good to massage the triceps just to get it to stretch that little bit more in preparation for and do it on both sides, or hold you know, hold it in a sort of format that allows that stretch to happen.
It takes also, I mean, in the world of scoliosis, sometimes we can have a rib hump. So one part of the rib cage sticks out more so. So it can be a little bit uncomfortable. But I remember when you and when I took your course, doing that with you and Kelly, and just resting it on the shoulder and then letting it fall behind me, and just really staying with that and letting the weight comfortably shift behind me towards the floor. And that takes a while to get used to.
It does, and it does, and it's very. I mean, and you know, after so many years of practice, I still do that personally to this day.
Yeah,
you know, I use it. I mean, I use obviously a much larger weight. So I mean, I would do that exercise with a 10 kilo. So I mean, it's about 20 pound or so, 22 pounds. You know, gada hanging behind on one arm,
right?
And I'll stand there for a minute holding that.
Okay.
Then I'll change arms and do the other one, and then. As I've done one arm, let's say I've done my left arm first, I'll drop it down, let the blood come back into my arm whilst I'm doing the other one. And then I rest my right arm, and just making sure that I've got that sort of, you know, it teaches you to retain the memory of where the swing should happen from. And the point, the pivot point is the elbows. So important.
And yes, and I would like to just backtrack for a second. You said you've been swinging since 2007, correct?
Yeah.
Would you share with us a little bit the history of the gata and how it, I know that it, did it start in India? Because that's what
It did. I mean, so there's conflicting views about this.
Okay.
Of course, because the Persians say they invented it, or the Iranians, and the Indians say they invented it. I think the important thing to remember is that they all shared a border at one stage. So Persia and India shared a border, and there were, you know, they would invade to one side, invade to the other side. And so consequently, there was a lot of mixture happening there. Mm-hmm. And there's some huge common denominators between the different styles that exist in both countries. Going to the mace or the gada itself basically developed in the north part of India, in Varanasi itself, as a method of training to throw your wrestling opponent over the shoulder, either with a headlock or an arm lock. So we're talking about getting the person behind you, mm-hmm. you know, with a headlock and then bringing them over your shoulder, and you're going to roll with them when you're doing this. And this is basically, in wrestling, we're trying to look at getting the shoulders of your opponent down onto the ground. Mm-hmm. So both shoulders have to be down onto the ground.
Okay.
Now, I'm not a wrestling expert, but I know that that's part of the reason why the gada is very common, commonly used in northern India, especially for that one sole purpose, is the arm lock and the headlock, mm-hmm. and it's practiced for that. Not only that, but it develops also huge strength. And I mean, you know, you've suddenly got that. You're dealing with a lot of, let's say, for instance, we go to a 10-kilo mace, swinging that over your shoulder. By the time it reaches your center back, we're talking about 30 kilos, and then it rises back up to 10 kilos again when it's at the front of the body. So, you know, you're dealing with the shock of the body, dealing with that. And believe you me, when you're dealing with weights like that, you have to swing from your elbows. Your hands if you swing from your wrists, your elbows will suffer with something equivalent to a tennis elbow.
Okay.
So the strain is massive. And it's used to this day. You know, they will do ladders, for example. I do them at home here. I have 7 kilos, 8 kilos, 9 kilos, 10 kilos, 12. Mm-hmm. And I will do sets of each one for training. You know, every day, so I'll ladder up gradually to get to the heaviest weight, and that'll take me maybe 40 minutes to do that, because I'll try to do 5 to 10 minute sets with each one.
Okay.
And it just, I read my body and sort of, so that's the mace or the gada from northern India. Mm-hmm. In Iran, it's different, because in Iran it's more military based.
Okay.
And in Iran, they have two clubs. They sometimes call them, some of them call them maces, but they're called meals, which is M-E-E-L.
Okay.
Meal, the Persian meal. And they're two clubs which are basically held in front of the body and swung alternatively. One club is lifted up, swung behind the head, brought back mm-hmm. to the front, and the other one. So it's two-handed.
Okay.
And if you think about it, as with the gada and the shoulder, the shoulder turn to the half turn to the left, half turn to the right. If you think about it, if you're holding a shield, wartime, we're going back sort of thousands of years here, mm-hmm. holding a shield to protect your body from a strike from an opponent. Mm-hmm. So your left shoulder will be forward. You've got your sword in your right hand, so your sword is then now. You're going to take a hit with a sword. Mm-hmm. So you're going to move the shield out of the way. You're going to rotate your right shoulder forward, strike, and then bring the shield back.
Right.
The movement with the meals is basically this.
Okay.
So consequently, you know, it's that rotational movement of the shoulders, exactly the same as it is with the gada, because with the mace or the gada, we're throwing it on the frontal plane. It has to swing behind us. So consequently, you've got to rotate your shoulders slightly to the forward, left shoulder forward, right shoulder forward to recover. Mm-hmm. Putting back. So the technique is very, very similar.
Okay.
So it's a military, in Persia or Iran, it's more based on military style, you know, old sword and shield fighting. Mm-hmm. In India, it's more to do with wrestling and their traditional forms of wrestling in mud pits or that type of thing.
Right, but they pretty much all serve the same purpose in terms of the movement of the body and how you use it.
Yes, and I mean that's the interesting thing when during the British Raj in India, the British military saw the training mm-hmm. that was being done by the locals, by the local police, wrestlers, everybody was doing it. Basically, men were doing it.
Okay.
If you now sort of draw a parallel with using a sword to fight with, because we're talking about the 1800s here.
Wow.
So, we know, I mean, muskets and guns were sort of just starting. They started earlier than that. They were being used, but the sword was still actively used.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now this is my version of this. This is not out of a book or somewhere, but my understanding is that the Indian club was formed, the 2-pound club, much shorter than the mace, smaller than the meal, the 2 pounds. Mm-hmm. It has the same handling as a military issue sword. And I've had this sort of the opportunity to hold both. One in one hand, one in the other.
Mm-hmm.
The feeling is exactly the same. That was an eye opener to me. So because from then on, I mean, I saw this in a collection that's in Los Angeles of military swords, and the guy's also interested in even clubs. And he showed me this, and to me, it was like, well, yes, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
So consequently, a wooden club, much cheaper to produce. You wouldn't have to ship it from England to India.
Right.
And consequently, if it gets damaged, we can remake one locally. But you can train with this. I mean, you're training your shoulders, you're training the, you know, manipulation, movements, everything else. And so consequently, that's how I think that the Indian club was born into military training. And then it was taken by these, especially the English army in India. And it was adopted then more so, interestingly enough, by the English Navy. But it became the staple diet of military training in England and in Scotland and everywhere else, as far as the army was concerned. And then obviously as people left the military, came back to the Europe, basically, because it also became popular in Czechoslovakia, Germany, and so on.
Okay.
It became, used by citizens and a favorite way of training.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons why it was encouraged was there was a movement called Muscular Christianity, which basically, you know, you are of pure mind and your healthy body, and so consequently, you know, you were encouraged to do exercise and sort of be a churchgoer at the same time. It was, you know, Muscular Christianity was at the center of it.
Okay.
So consequently, I think in most places in Europe and in the USA, people would go prior to modern media and sort of electronics and everything else. You would go to church on Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and then everybody would gather outside, and they'd maybe go into the church hall, or the pews would be moved away in the church, and it would become a meeting ground. Somebody would sit down at a piano. And then we'd get the kids out first,
right.
You know, have a swing with your clubs. Then possibly the women would do it. Then the men would do it. Somebody would be up on stage leading all this.
Wow.
This is how it used to happen. And that's how the popularity of Indian clubs grew in the Western, in Western society. So from about sort of, you know, the early days were 1830s, but then by about 1860 through to about 1930, this was incredibly popular.
Interesting.
And you know, the swinging of it was group exercise, you know, after church on Sundays. It's amazing.
Dressed in your best.
Dressed in your best, yeah. I mean, we didn't have sports, we didn't have lycra in those days.
Right. Or
anything like that.
But
just think it was it's a great way to get everybody moving, and you've got sort of, you know, you're clean spiritually and physically.
Yeah. And it's such a, you know, it's so often that we say it's an unconventional tool, because it's not your stereotypical dumbbells. It is what you said, like bringing people together to move in ways that I don't have any other better words than it just being freeing.
Yes. Yeah. I totally agree with that.
You become free, and there's a meditative process with it. And when you get that move, whatever it is, and if you're using the clubs or a gada or a mace, and you just nail it, and like you just beam.
Yeah.
It just absolutely feels you know.
You have an internal smile, I like to put right. it that way. Yeah, no, I spend most of my Saturdays or weekends, because I train every morning, mm-hmm. and most of the Saturdays and Sundays are spent in what I call freestyle. It doesn't matter whether it's the mace, gada, or Indian clubs. Mm-hmm. I will just experiment and I'll swing. Sometimes I'll get obsessed with one movement. I also really analyze my mistakes. So if I crash my clubs, for example, what did I do? Why did I do it? That's when I first started recording my things for YouTube, for example, was when I originally started by recording. I wanted to catch my mistakes. What mm-hmm. did I do wrong? And then I eventually started becoming aware of YouTube, and I started posting on YouTube, and then I actually prepared videos for YouTube. But the thing is, it's experimentation. You know, you can learn from your mistakes. I mean, as in everything that we do, you know, if you're a writer or a painter
right.
or whatever, if you make mistakes, you're going to learn from them. And this is exactly the same. So you can swing your clubs. You can experiment with how you're holding the clubs, how you're gripping them, how you swing them, make circles. And I think another interesting thing with the mace and with Indian clubs is that you probably know, you may have heard of choking. I mean, mm-hmm. choking, say in the States, would be a very common expression for instance, holding a baseball bat, because you're going to choke it to make it shorter.
Right.
But you can do the same type of thing with Indian clubs and the mace, and that changes the way that the whatever it is swings. So consequently, it becomes slightly easier, or it becomes more difficult. I think one of my favorite expressions as far as workshops is concerned, when you know everybody picks up all the students pick up the mace for the first time, and they're holding it in front of them, and some of them are tipping them slightly forward, fighting with it, mm-hmm. and you have to literally lean it into the body. You can use your forehead or your right. nose as a rest, and then you have to. The favorite expression is, you have to become intimate, and it's like a sort of, it's like the first date. You know, you have to get used to holding that weight, the bulk of which is over your head.
Yeah.
And, you know, the closer you hold it to your body, the safer it's going to be.
Yeah. Which is an intimidating factor, because you think of intimate is the perfect analogy of it, because it just is.
Well, it just is. It is. I mean, you have to become comfortable. And basically, you're holding a weight upside down. And normally, any of us would pick that up with the bulk of the weight down to the floor. Here, you're doing the total reverse.
Right.
So, it's a bizarre situation, to say the least.
It is, but it's such a gift. And it was a gift and an honor that I had the opportunity to work with you when you came to New York to do the workshop.
Yeah, no, likewise. I'm just so glad that you managed to take it on, Teresa. I mean, it's great. It's really cool.
There's nothing better. It's a freedom of feeling limitless with my limitations. So
with the people that you've got, that you've been sort of sharing it with, that you've got the issues that you have. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And, but it started with you guys.
Yeah.
It started with you. And that's why I wanted to bring you on the show, because like I said in my book, and I know many other people will agree with this, you are one of the masters in this field.
Thank you.
And I wanted you to come in and just share your journey and your story and how you started it and where it's been. And I know that you mentioned before that you're in Perth, Western Australia. Mm. And if people want to reach out to you and have questions about working with you, whether in Australia or in the States or wherever, where is the best place that they can do that?
Well, there's also obviously social media. My on Instagram, I've just got used my surname, which is Volkovinsky. I'll spell that Volkovinski. That's my the user on Instagram, where you can see short videos there of everything that I do. Otherwise, I'm on Facebook using Paul Volkovinsky, and my two websites are indianclubs.com.au, which is Australia, and I have a second website, which is indianclubsacademy.com. So those two are the, and that has courses there that I've done with Kelly Manzoni that you can access if you want to learn from there, or contact me direct through the websites by email, or just message me on Instagram or Facebook. You know, it doesn't matter which. I'll get back to them.
Well, Paul, I would like to thank you once again. It is my honor to have you on this podcast. If anybody has any questions, please feel free to reach out to Paul and he will get back to you.
Yeah. So,
Paul, I'd like to thank you for being a guest on the show.
Okay. No, thanks, Teresa. Thanks.
If you'd like to know more about what it's like training with a mace, go to my page at t3fit.com, or you can find me on Instagram, also under t3fit. If you like this episode, chances are there's someone else out there who needs to hear it too. So it would be a huge favor to me if you'd go ahead and give us a 5-star review. It helps me get the message out to more people. And if you need help moving in pain, then download my 5 free tips, and I'll catch you on the next episode.